Hi, Marty Lurie here, KNBR 680 with Peter McGowan. Of course, I always love seeing Peter at the ballpark. Peter, there's a part of your story, and we've done the early years of becoming a New York Giant fan with the transistor radio and going to the World Series and things like that. But you followed the Giants out to San Francisco. What a coincidence, and then the story really takes off.
Right. My family was moved from New York to San Francisco in 1957 when my dad was asked to be the CEO of Safeway. So we moved from New York to San Francisco. I was in boarding school at the time, and little did I think that my baseball team was going to go to the same place. I mean, I was so sad to see the Giants leave, and then so happy when I found out where they were leaving to go to.
What did you think of Seal Stadium?
Of course, I loved it. I love Seal Stadium, 23,448 seats, and my dad bought us some seats that first year, and I went to many games that summer. I worked for Safeway during, you know, the week, etc., but I'd get to the night games, and it was a wonderful ballpark, I thought, you know.
What do you remember about Seal Stadium? Now, I bring up things that people mention to me, the Hams beer sign, the bakery smell, but what's distinctive about it?
What I thought was distinctive is something that probably isn't distinctive at all today, but it was a real green seat ballpark. The stadium was as green as it could be. The walls were green, and the seats were green, and starting with Camden Yards in, I think, 1992, all the new parks seemed to have this baseball color green, but that's what I associated first with Seal Stadium, and you know, I have so many memories of the games there. One of my favorite players was Stu Miller, and watching him pitch against Frank Howard, that was really a lot of fun. And watching Drysdale pitch against Mays, also a lot of fun. First ball right at his head, and Willie would get his hat would go flying. He'd dust himself off, get up, ball two, right at his head again. But he hit Drysdale pretty well.
He did. Yeah. Well, you saw Giants-Dodgers in New York at the Polo Grounds, Ebbets
right.
Field, and now you see Giants-Dodgers in California. Was it different?
I think it was a little different in the sense that I think the fans in both places really had a passion to kill each other. I mean, the Ebbets Field Dodger fans hated the Giants, and I don't think the L.A. crowd today hates the Giants. I think our crowd does hate the Dodgers pretty much, but not the other way around. So I don't think it had quite that intensity. And then I think the ballplayers themselves, they know the fans think of this as a huge rivalry. But I don't think they think of it as a huge rivalry the way they used to. I mean, in the old days when you played on the same team for 8, 9, 10 years at a time, you know, all those Giants players playing 22 games against the Dodgers, they knew the opposition and vice versa. And then they almost shared this clubhouse, you know, between the little narrow wall between where the Giants were and the Dodgers, where they could hear the Dodgers through the wall, and Dodgers could hear the Giants. And there were a lot of fights between those two teams. So I think the intensity was greater in those days, but it's still a fantastic rivalry today.
Boy, nice to have Peter McGowan with us. Peter, when we think of the 60s, and we're going to move ahead in your career here with the Giants because it gets very interesting, but you're looking at the offense of the Giants with Jim Ray Hart, and here comes Gaylord Perry and Marichal, and then you had Maury Wills on the other side, and Alvin Dark managing against Walter Alston. This is storybook baseball stuff.
Well, it is, and you think about that first team, the first Giants team out here, the 58 team. We had Whitey Lockman at first base, and he was a darn good baseball player. And then we had Bill White returning from the Army, another tremendous player. Neither of them played first base for the Giants because we had Cepeda, and backing him up, if you can consider it a backup, McCovey. So think of those four guys just playing first base. And And then all those Latin players in the outfield, they're all great players, three Alou brothers and the three Willies in the same lineup. I mean, all those rookies. I think we had four rookies in the opening day lineup in 58. And it was a very exciting team. The Giants in 57 were not a very exciting team, but suddenly in 58, with a lot of new young blood, they were.
Boy, Peter McGowan, all right, so now you're here. You're in California. Then you become involved with the Giants, board of directors with the Giants, and how does that come about?
Well, Bob Lurie asked me onto the board. I think he wanted one or two businessmen on the board. Now, Al Rosen was a good businessman himself, but I think he wanted one or two others on the board, and he asked me. I knew Bob, and so he asked me, and I was there for 11 years, and it was very interesting. I learned a lot. Bob was very nice to me, invited us on road trips and playoffs and things like that. That's how I was sort of pretty intimately involved with the Giants. I mean, I didn't have any management role, really, but I knew what was going on.
What's it like being on the board of directors of the Giants? Because I always, when I went to law school, the word was directors must direct. So if you accept being on a board of directors, you have to do something.
Well, I think it makes a difference when the board of directors is on a organization where the owner is owning 100% of the team. You're not going to have the say or the influence that you would when management is really working at the pleasure of the board. I've been on many boards, and a private company like the Giants is very different from all the rest. But it was still a wonderful experience, and I learned a lot as a board member. Al Rosen was very good to us. He always solicited opinions, and everybody had opinions.
Okay. Well, pretty good. Well, I know the personalities. There's a lot of opinions involved. Nice with Peter McGowan. All right, so now the Giants are threatened. They could move all of a sudden, and you step in a very important time in Giants history. So this is an important part of our story.
Well, Bob called me up, and he told me that this was after they'd lost the election in San Jose, and that was the fourth election that they lost, that he couldn't make it a Candlestick. He couldn't get a new ballpark, so he had no choice but to sell the team. And I told him, you know, I understood the logic of all of that, but I was very sad to think that this was going to happen, and eventually came to the conclusion that I'd do whatever I could to, you know, stop it from happening.
Peter, our story continues, and I think a very important point. I enjoyed hearing you being on the board of directors, more of an advisor with Bob Lurie and his confidants in those days. But then the team almost goes to Tampa Bay, and it takes a lot to stop that from happening. You were instrumental, and I'd love to hear the story how that came about.
Well, I think Larry Bear probably had as much to do with this as anybody, and he was the one that persuaded me to really leave my job at Safeway and come on over to the Giants, which I wasn't sure I was prepared to do because I really enjoyed my work at Safeway. I'd been the CEO there for 13 years. But Larry said, you know, we just got to do this. We can't lose the Giants. And that certainly resonated with me, with my background watching them go when I grew up in New York City. It was a very sad day for everybody in New York when that happened. You know, one of the things about that New York time, the next year the Yankees had New York all to themselves. And you would have thought now with one team in New York, instead of three, their attendance would have gone up. But it went down. And it went down because people were that discouraged with baseball seeing these two storied teams leave. And I saw the whole thing happening again in 92. And I wasn't really confident that we'd be able to pull this off. And I said, well, if we can't do this, maybe I can go back to Safeway. But maybe I couldn't. So it was certainly a risk that I ended up being prepared to take.
Well, the team is pretty much gone. Bill White's the president of the National League. And it's sort of an 11th hour save with the mayor, Frank Jordan, involved, and you and many other people. How did it all come about at the 11th hour?
Well, I think we coalesced finally around selecting me as the one person in our group that really was prepared to run the thing. A lot of the other prospective owners wanted to keep the team in San Francisco because it would have been a terrible blow to the reputation of the city if we became the first team to lose its first city to lose its team since the Washington Senators left to go to Texas in, I think, 1971. So baseball really values stability of its franchises. And these other investors did not want to see the Giants go, but they weren't prepared to give up their jobs to run it. So they asked me if I'd be willing to do it, and I said I would. Larry did a hell of a job in rounding up people. We were cold calling potential investors left and right. We ended up with a lot of smaller investors, and we were hoping really to probably do this with a few large investors, and we ended up with a whole lot of smaller ones. But the smaller ones really in some ways turned out to be our best partners, because they love the game, they loyally supported the Giants all these years, and they know the game, they know baseball. So we had a large group. Some would call it an unwieldy group, but I think that we were all interested in the same objectives, to try to keep the team here and then to try to really get the rights to build a new stadium.
Well, the team is now saved, and they're here. And now, of course, winter meetings come up, and a free agent comes on the market, Barry Bonds. And yeah. You have to make that decision without even owning the team.
Right. Well, that was the tricky part of it. The negotiations with Barry's agent, which was Dennis Gilbert, we did that one night in a hotel that no longer exists next to the airport. And I think it took about a minute for the two of us to agree, the agent and myself, to spend the $43 million on 6 years. But the trick was we didn't own the team. And the next day, the Winter League meetings were opening, and Larry and I were going to those meetings, and we had a press conference all arranged for Barry to be presented as the newest Giant. And we got word to cancel our press conference and come up and see the acting commissioner, Bud Selig, and a few other people, as they put it. So we go up there, and there's the lawyer for the American League and the lawyer for the National League. Never a good sign. There was the head of the ownership committee, and they were all saying, well, you know, why do we let these guys come into the game? They don't even own the team, and they've already spent more money than anybody's ever spent on a baseball player.
Wow.
So we had to overcome quite a few hurdles with this inquisitory group. And it took us a few days to do it, but we managed to do it.
Wow, what a great story. Great story of how the Giants...
And then the first time Barry comes up, the candlestick, he hits home run. That year, he becomes MVP again. We win 103 games, which we've never done before or since. So we got off to a good start.
Boy, great story. Well, then things get even more interesting because you want to have your own ballpark. And now, privately financed ballpark, this is unheard of in Major League Baseball. And, of course, the city of San Francisco, Bob Lurie, had tried so many times to get a ballpark initiative passed, couldn't get it done. And here, now it's you're up to the plate.
Well, the question was, we knew we couldn't do it with approaching the public again a fifth time on a publicly financed ballpark. In San Francisco, that wouldn't work. I'm not saying it wouldn't work in many other places. It would work, but not in San Francisco. So we had to do it privately, and the problem was that there was no blueprint on how to do that because it had never been done except for Dodger Stadium, and they were given all that land, 45 acres or whatever it was, and we weren't really given anything. So It was a real challenge, but we felt we could do it. And the first step was to try to sell our best seats in the ballpark, 15,000 of them for $5,000 a seat. And if we could do that, we had, you know, $75 million all of a sudden. And then we could start talking to banks that we've already gotten some money with the naming rights. That gave us another $50 million. So little by little, we were able to do it. And we promised the public, you know, let us build you for free a privately financed ballpark. That's how we won the vote. So we couldn't very well go back and say, well, we tried to finance this thing privately, but we couldn't do it, so please now do it publicly. And that just wouldn't work. So we had to do it privately, and things fell into place, but we were very lucky. At the time that we went out for our money, interest rates were relatively low, and the economy was booming, and you had all the Silicon Valley money around, profit being made left and right down there. And, you know, 10 years later, that might have been much harder to do. All those things didn't come together. So we were lucky with the economic environment at the time.
But you did get turned down by some people. This was not a piece of cake to put all this together.
No, we got turned down by, I mean, the Bank of America was our bank. For 50 years, they'd been our bank, ever since the Giants had been there. So I was sure they would agree to finance our ballpark. But they said, no one's ever done this before, so we don't think we can do that. So then we went to Wells Fargo. The chairman of Wells Fargo was on my board at Safeway. And we said to them, you know, what a wonderful opportunity. You can replace the Bank of America. You can finance the first privately financed ballpark. You will be the place to go for people that are going to want to do this in the future. And people are going to want to do this in the future because the public's not going to put up forever with public financing of these stadiums. They turned us down. So we eventually ended up with Chase Bank in New York, and I give them a lot of credit. Jimmy Lee was the chief banker over there, and he believed in our story.
But you eventually got the $375 million that you needed.
$175. The stadium was $330, and we needed $175 in a bank loan, which we were able to get. So that was good.
That was good. That was very good. All right.
That was a huge relief when we got that thing signed, and it was a 20-year mortgage, which I'm happy to say we paid off a couple of months ago.
And you did mention to me that the mortgage at least was an offset against some revenue sharing over those years.
Our revenue sharing will go up because baseball gives an exemption on some of the capital investment for a new stadium, and we benefited from that, as do any other clubs that are building it privately. But that now goes away. So we will pay more revenue sharing, but it's a good trade. No more debt, a bit more revenue sharing.
What a great story. This is a great story. Now, I do know that you were instrumental in some of the touches of the ballpark, even the cream-colored uniforms, the scoreboard in the outfield.
We wanted an old-fashioned look to the park, and these cream-colored uniforms were the color of old uniforms. We didn't want any names on the backs of the uniforms, at least the home uniforms. A lot of controversy over that because a lot of people say, how are we going to know who the players are? But if it was good enough for the Yankees and it was good enough for the Red Sox, who are maybe two of the most famous traditional ball clubs, then it's going to be good enough for the Giants. So we had a classic uniform, which I'm proud to say we haven't changed since 93. Classic ballpark. The out-of-town scores are put up manually. The flags on the roof are like what Wrigley Field has. The bullpens on the field are like what we see at Wrigley. There's a lot of opposition to that from all kinds of people, starting with the commissioner of baseball. But I think the fans want to see these bullpen pitchers warming up. Almost, I remember the year we started out here, we had John Rocker. Do you remember him? The left-handed relief pitcher for the Braves who said some nasty things while on the subway in New York. And our fans would have a good chance to ask him about his views on those subjects when they could almost reach out and touch him. And that's what I think the fans really wanted. We tried to create the smallest foul territory in all of baseball to put the fans as close to the action as we could. We've had to make a few concessions, like the protective wiring that we put up, but it's for a good cause. We don't want to see anybody hurt. Fortunately, our fans here are so good athletes, and they bring their mitts. Whether you're 80 years old or 8, you know, you've got a mitt with you, and we haven't really had hardly any serious injuries in all the years we've been here. So,
well, I've looked forward to this conversation and chronicling this, and I know you're in the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame, but you know something? We talked about Horace Stoneham as a candidate for the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. You made a good argument for yourself.
Well, I thought he deserved to be there. He was the owner of the Giants for a long time, and with his father over 40 years, maybe over 50 years. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But he was the one who brought the first Latin American players to baseball, and what a group he brought. You know, Marichal and Cepeda and the Alou brothers and Jose Pagan and all these great players. And also at a time that most of the attention was on Jackie Robinson and Larry Doby, you know, the Giants were as much a leader in this area of integrating African-American players into our game as anybody. I mean, we had 3 African-American players on the 1951 team in the 8-man starting lineup, Hank Thompson and Monty Irvin and Willie Mays. So I heard a story once that one of the reasons why the Giants moved to Arizona from Florida during spring training was because Horace was very upset at the segregation laws in Florida that prevented our players from all eating in the same restaurant or sleeping in the same hotel. And so he moved out to Arizona and got one other team to go with him, the Cleveland Indians. But that was a very brave move. So, and he won the pennant in 51. He won in 54. He was in the World Series in 62. So the Giants also did well on the field. They had many, many great players. So I think for all of that, he deserves his place in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think we make a good argument for you.
No. The thing about my role is that I had a lot of help. Larry Bear, my right arm for all those years, and we worked together for 17 years. Couldn't have done it without Larry. He was the most well-rounded baseball executive I've ever met. I mean, he could do every part of the job. None of this would have happened without him. I had a lot of support from my fellow owners. I didn't have the money to buy the team by myself. And then we had all the support from the fans. I mean, somebody had to agree to buy 15,000 seats and fork over the money. So when people say, you know, well, Peter, you built this ballpark, I really say it was built by a lot of people, not least of which were our fans.
Well, someone's got to lead the charge. And that's always a story, and you led the charge.
Well, I led the charge, and I had a passion for what I was doing. I mean, I really did believe that the cause was right and that I would give everything I had to try to make it as successful as I possibly could and eventually turn over the organization to people in better shape than what I inherited it. And I think that's what the objective of every ownership should be, to try to just leave something better for your successors.
Well, that's a story of America, of business and baseball and passion and loyalty and love. And I think you did it all.
Well, thank you very much, Marty. I appreciate that.
All right, more coming up. KMBR 680, the sports leader.